Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session today, you may press star one to ask a question. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I'll turn the call over to Mr. Tom Skinner. You may begin, sir.
Thank you, Shirley, and thank you all for joining us today. Hopefully, you all have a copy of today's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which contains an article about national, state, and local area vaccination coverage among children aged 19 to 35 months of age in the United States for the year 2009. With me today is Dr. Anne Schuchat. That's A-N-N-E-S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T. And she is the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. She's going to provide a brief opening statement regarding the data in the MMWR, and then we will open the lines up to your questions. So, Dr. Schuchat.
Thanks, Tom. Good afternoon, everyone. Today we have reassuring news on the national childhood immunization front. I want people to know that vaccination rates in infants and toddlers remain high. We have increases in some of the newer vaccines or newer vaccine recommendations, but we did see a drop in one vaccine that was in shorter supply during the period that this survey was conducted. We're reporting on the 2009 National Immunization Survey. The survey shows that immunization of children 19 to 35 months of age against vaccine-preventable diseases is high. Fewer than 1% of young children did not get any vaccines at all. So fewer than 1% of parents of these young children were opting out of the vaccination system altogether. The survey is carried out by telephone, and this survey reports on results for 17,313 children who were born between January 2006 and July 2008, and about the vaccinations they had received by the time they were 19 to 35 months of age. We saw continuing high vaccine coverage against poliovirus, against measles, mumps, and rubella, against the hepatitis B virus, against chickenpox or varicella virus. Each of those vaccines had coverage that was near or above our target of 90% for children in this age group. We saw increases in vaccination against hepatitis A and in receipt of a birth dose of hepatitis B vaccine. Those were two of the newer recommendations that we were tracking with this report. Coverage of those two vaccines increased. We saw an increase in hepatitis A coverage of 6 percentage points and an increase in the birth dose of hepatitis B vaccine of 5 percentage points, comparing the 2008 and 2009 National Immunization Survey results. The survey detected a substantial drop in coverage of the Haemophilus influenza B, or HIB, vaccine that we know was in short supply during this period. During this period, we actually recommended suspension of a booster dose of vaccine because of the short supply. Our system detected that 83.6% of toddlers had received three doses of HIB vaccine in the 2009 survey. That was down 6 percentage points from 2008 and really just reflects the national shortage that we were under. Fortunately, when we analyzed the data about completion of the primary series of HIB vaccine, which could be just two doses or three doses depending on the type of vaccine, we found that 92% of children had received the appropriate primary series, consistent with the idea that providers were following the recommendations for dropping the booster dose during the shortage. The very good news about HIB vaccine is that the shortage is over and the vaccine is now readily available. That shortage was just between December 2007 and September 2009, but it was a bad enough shortage that it showed up in our national coverage estimates. We got good news on the rotavirus vaccine front. Rotavirus vaccine was first licensed in the U.S. in 2006, with a second vaccine being licensed in 2008. Today's report is reporting for the first time on rotavirus vaccine coverage with our national data. It shows a similar good uptake early in the course of a vaccine's introduction. 44% of toddlers in this survey had received the rotavirus vaccine during their infancy. And when we look at just the youngest of toddlers in this survey, in terms of children who were born between January and June of 2008, 60% of those children had received the rotavirus vaccine series. So that's very good uptake of this vaccine. Of course, we're already seeing a very important drop in disease caused by the rotavirus. We did see variation across the states in vaccine coverage. States with the highest and lowest coverage varied by particular vaccines. We saw several states had significant increases in completing four doses of the pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. We see state-to-state variation each year, and that's an important thing to follow and an important area for state programs and providers to work on. We also saw some disparities in immunization by race or ethnicity group and between poor children and more affluent children. We have seen those over the years. Fortunately, the disparities are less than they used to be based on the successful Vaccines for Children program, which provides vaccine at no cost to uninsured and other vulnerable children. The VFC program has been quite effective at reducing, but not eliminating, gaps among children in vaccine coverage. So today's report is generally very reassuring. Despite concerns that we've seen in the past about whether parents are continuing to have their children vaccinated, and despite some resurgences in vaccine-preventable diseases in particular areas, today's national report provides good news. Most parents are continuing to make sure their children are receiving the recommended vaccines and keeping them protected against life-threatening vaccine-preventable diseases. So with that, I'd be open to take questions.
Okay, great. Shirley, we'll take the first question, and as we start the question and answer period, I want to remind the media on the call that the MMWR is embargoed till noon, and while we started our media briefing at 11, the material is embargoed till noon. So with that, Shirley, we'll open up to Q&A.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and record your name clearly. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and one moment for our first question. Our first question comes from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press. You may ask your question.
Hi, Doctor. Thanks for taking the call. I'm curious about pertussis and about measles, two diseases we've seen increases in. I'm looking at Table 1. Three doses of DTP, DTaP. There was a decline from 2008 to 2009. Was that significant, and why did that occur, do you think? I'm also a few lines down wondering about MMR and the decrease from 2008. Was that significant, and why do you think that occurred?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think that the pertussis and measles outbreaks that we've seen are very important to mention. I don't think that the infant or toddler DTP series is the reason for those outbreaks of pertussis. We think that the principal challenge there is ongoing pertussis transmission in teens and adults, and the very youngest of children, babies under 2 months of age, are the most vulnerable to serious complications of pertussis. So we think the challenge with those pertussis outbreaks is increasing vaccination of teens and adults, and it continues to be important for babies and toddlers to get their DTaP doses in. The measles was a significant drop, but not a large drop. Between 2008 and 2009, MMR coverage fell from 92.1% down to 90.0%. That might be a warning sign of larger drops to come, or a small change that, because our survey is so very large, was statistically significant. On the other hand, nationally, the measles coverage rates can be high. You know, 90% is our target to achieve for the first dose of MMR. And you can still have communities with very large pockets of susceptible children. What we saw in 2008 was communities where certain schools had a large number of children who were unvaccinated. When the virus was imported from other countries where measles still is very common, the virus could find a vulnerable population to spread in. And, of course, babies under 1 month, 1 year of age don't yet receive measles vaccine, and they are, again, very vulnerable. So those two examples show that we can't let our guard down. Vaccine-preventable diseases are everywhere around the world, and we're lucky here in the U.S. that most of these are at record low levels. For some, like pertussis, we have an opportunity to really strengthen our protection by vaccinating adults, especially those around young babies, vaccinating teens, the older brothers and sisters of these babies, and to make sure that we have healthcare workers vaccinated as well. With measles, we can never let down our guard. In any community where there's a large number of susceptibles, you can see a measles outbreak. And while we've been able to maintain our status as having eliminated the indigenous spread of measles, unfortunately, we saw a country like the United Kingdom, which had eliminated measles, unable to break the chains of transmission and now continuing to be facing a large outbreak. So I think this shows that every year parents need to remain vigilant, and we need providers to keep doing the great job of educating parents about vaccines, answering their questions, and making sure they're able to protect their kids. Next question, please.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question, press star 1. Our next question comes from Bill Hendrick with the WebMD. You may ask your question.
Hello, Doctor. I'm having a little trouble with my reading glasses and also with table 2.
Okay.
The 95.4 for Alabama means what?
Right. The 95.4 for Alabama means that 95.4% of children 19 to 35 months of age in Alabama had received at least one dose of the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine. So table 2 is in the first row, you see the U.S. figures for MMR,
uh-huh.
Pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, hepatitis B birth dose, hepatitis A two-dose series, and rotavirus vaccines, and then you also have the individual states. We think it's important for people to be cautious about comparing each individual state because the confidence intervals are fairly wide. That for Alabama, that plus or minus 2.9 percentage points means that the survey's only accurate within that amount. And for some of the smaller states, they're pretty large confidence intervals around that, you know, the uncertainty around the estimate. So, you know, for each state, there's useful data here, but there's an awful lot of data for you reporters, so we're sorry about that.
Well, that's no problem. By my count, there were, in that particular column, there were 28 states plus D.C. that had, let's see, raised for routine, for this particular one in column 1 of 90% or higher. 3 states, and I understand what you said about the variation, but Arkansas and Alaska and Colorado were much lower. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, the U.S. Virgin Islands was incredibly lower. But I think you've already explained it by saying don't put too much in stock in these variations.
Yeah, and I think the key point with MMR is that we need very high coverage levels because measles is such an infectious virus. We have a two-dose recommendation for MMR for children to get the first dose around 12 months of age and a second dose before school entry. We've had to have very high rates of measles second dose coverage in order to sustain the elimination of measles spread in the U.S. so that when imported cases come in, they don't find places to spread. But it takes continued effort to sustain those high rates. We've had resurgences a couple times in the U.S. The worst was 1989 to 1991 with about 55,000 hospitalizations for measles. And we know that if we don't maintain these very high rates, we'll be back in that severe time. So that's why we track these numbers every year and we feed them back to each state so that they can be on top of this. Even when the state numbers are reassuring, though, there can be local communities with large numbers of vulnerable children. So this is a responsibility for every community, for every parent, for every doctor, really, to take seriously.
Okay. But can I follow this up? One really quick question, which is this. And I know scientists don't like to give opinions or to speculate, but I'm wondering if the big scare of the last few years, claiming to show a connection between autism and vaccination, childhood vaccination, may be keeping some parents from, I mean, 90% is pretty good, but may be keeping some parents from having their children vaccinated.
You know, we know that parents have a lot of questions, and it's really important for us to provide good information so they can make wise choices for their families. There have been questions about measles and autism. At this point, a number of studies have been done, and that question has really been resolved. There is no link between measles vaccine, the MMR vaccine, and autism. In fact, the original article that proposed that link was retracted by the scientists involved. So at this point, that we know is a residual concern for some people, and I think it's vital that we get good information to parents so they can protect their children. CDC has a website, www.cdc.gov/vaccines, that has excellent information, including information for parents and for providers to help them answer the questions they have about the safety and the efficacy of vaccines. So could we go to the next question, please, operator?
Yes, thank you. And again, press star 1 to ask a question. Our next question comes from Nina Thorson with KQED Radio. You may ask your question.
Hi, doctor. I'm in San Francisco, and wondering if you have anything specific to say about pertussis in California or in Northern California, given the epidemic situation that we have here right now.
Yeah, the situation in California is serious, and we are working together with the California Health Department to really promote uptake of the pertussis vaccine for teens and adults. That's called TDAP or TDAP. We know that the California Health Department has made vaccine available to hospitals where women deliver babies to try to make sure that new parents, moms and dads, get a TDAP vaccine and help protect their babies. Other people who are around young babies, adults, really do need to get the Tdap vaccine. It's relatively new. It was licensed in 2005, so it's newly available, and many adults didn't even know you were supposed to get it. It actually replaces the old tetanus diphtheria booster that you get every 10 years. You can get this instead of one of those every 10-year TD vaccines. The coverage in California for four doses of DTAP, that's the pertussis-containing baby shot, the coverage for four doses was 83.4%. That's not actually in the MMWR article, but it's information that California will have. We don't think it's the coverage level in the babies and toddlers that is leading to that pertussis challenge in California. We know that pertussis is a hard-to-control disease. It comes in cycles. Every 5 to 10 years, we have big challenges with it. And we're doing studies together with California to really understand all the details of what's going on there and the best way to control the problem. I do want people to know that you should be able to get Tdap either from your doctor or sometimes from your pharmacist or, again, at those birthing hospitals where babies are being delivered. So do ask your doctor about that, and we strongly recommend teens 11 years and up and adults to get one of those shots. Next question, please.
Hey, at this time I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. Oh, well, maybe give it a 30 seconds or so. If there's no further questions, then we'll conclude the briefing. And should reporters have follow-up questions, they can call the main press office here at CDC at 404-639-3286. Shirley, you still showing no questions?
Wait one moment, please. We do have a question from Tom Mao with Los Angeles Times. You may ask your question.
I'm sorry, Dr. Shuki. Could you repeat the name of the vaccine for teens and adults?
Right. It's T as in tetanus, D as in diphtheria, small a as in acellular, and capital P as in pertussis, which is the technical name for whooping cough. So it's TDAP, and it is the whooping cough booster vaccine is the other way you can ask for it. It should be readily available in California and in the Los Angeles area. We know that California is seeing record high amounts of pertussis this year. So far, they've actually had 9 babies die since January from pertussis, a really tragic story, record high for California, and we really hope that we can start to make a dent in that outbreak there, keeping the families protected. So very important for adults, for teens, for healthcare workers, for anybody who's going to be around a baby to make sure they've gotten the Tdap vaccine if they're 11 years old or over. So thanks for that follow-up question. Are there any other questions, operator?
We do have a question from Pam Auerbach with CBS News. Go ahead with your question.
I have 2 questions, both relating to pertussis. One is I've seen just in the last 2 days localized cases in West Virginia of children that were believed to be, quote, current in their vaccines who've come down with whooping cough. Wondering if the CDC is aware and how concerned that makes you. And 2, can a pregnant woman get the vaccine, and would she then pass the immunity on to her child?
We don't think that the cases that are occurring, this outbreak that we're seeing, is necessarily linked to incomplete vaccination. So it can happen that you've gotten all the vaccines you're supposed to get and you still get whooping cough. We know that vaccines given in infancy can wane in their protection. And so by the teen years in particular, we realize that children need a booster dose. And that's why that Tdap vaccine was developed and formulated, so that we could try to bump up the protection after the early childhood vaccines started to wear off. So there isn't a perfect 100% protection from the vaccine, and then again, protection could wane. In terms of whether the vaccine can be given during pregnancy, I have to say that that was a subject of much debate when our Advisory Committee for Immunization Practices was considering the recommendations. There were experts who felt the information was perfectly fine for the vaccine to be given during pregnancy, and some providers do that. But the actual committee recommended that it be given either before pregnancy or right at postpartum, right after the baby's born. There have been times where the vaccine's been used in pregnancy, and we haven't been aware of adverse events. But, of course, many parents and physicians are reluctant to give vaccines. That actually gives me an excuse to remind you that flu vaccine is out there, and it's perfectly fine and very strongly recommended to give influenza vaccine during pregnancy. Our current recommendation, though, for the pertussis vaccine is that we want all adults to get it, and when a mother gives birth, if she hasn't had a whooping cough vaccine yet, she should get it right at delivery. She can get it right there in the hospital. The father of the child can also get it. The other caretakers for the children can get it, and that really should provide a little cocoon of protection around the newborn, because babies at birth are too young to get the vaccine themselves. They don't get the vaccine until they're 2 months of age. So we're really trying to protect all those other people who are going to be holding the baby and feeding the baby and taking care of the baby. So that's our strategy for pregnant women. Sometimes people who are vaccinated can have milder diseases but not be perfectly protected. But in general, we think the key strategy for pertussis is to get those baby shots and the shots before you enter school, and then also to get the teen booster and for adults to get 1 Tdap vaccine. Are there any other questions?
At this time, I'm showing no further questions.
Okay. Shirley, thank you, and thank you all for joining us. And again, should you have follow-up questions later on, you can call the main press office here at CDC at 404-639-3286. A transcript of this telebriefing will be available later this afternoon. So thank you for joining us.
Bye. Thank you, and this does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation. At this time, you may disconnect your lines.